The only other son of a U.S. president to be elected to that office is John Quincy Adams. But there are other coincidences of resemblance between John Quincy Adams and George W. Bush. In 1825, John Quincy Adams won the White House, but he failed to win the popular vote of the American people. Have you heard a similar story recently? In fact, no one that year won a clear majority. A Tennessee senator by the name of Andrew Jackson won the most votes. Mr. Adams' father and George W. Bush's father were both one-term presidents. Their bids for re-election were dashed by some charismatic Southerners. Both sons rose to the office by attacking partisan politics. Former President George Bush has taken to calling the president-elect Quincy. And in recent days, George W. Bush has been reading a biography of John Quincy Adams. That book is John Quincy Adams, A Public Life, A Private Life. The author is Paul Nagel, and he joins us from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Professor Nagel, nice to talk to you again.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And what's it like to know that up until the moment he takes the oath of office, George W. Bush is reading your book?
Well, one would hope that perhaps he would put his hand solemnly on it and take the oath. I don't know what John Quincy Adams would think about it, being a professor and a man of letters himself, but he'd probably be pleased, if not amused.
Tell us, if you could, about the election that brought John Quincy Adams into the White House. How did the House of Representatives wind up electing John Quincy Adams over Senator Jackson then?
Well, the Jacksonians would say they did it through a corrupt bargain between John Quincy Adams and Henry Clay. Clay was the fourth. He ran slightly behind William H. Crawford in the electoral votes, and the statute said that the fourth candidate had to drop out. Well, Clay wanted very much to be Secretary of State. In those days, it was expected the Secretary of State would go on to be president. That had been the case in the previous several presidents. So the argument that the Jacksonians raised, and it raised the roof, was that Clay came to Adams and said, "I'll throw my support to you if you will make me Secretary of State." As it happens, Clay dropped out. His delegations in Congress, that's where the vote takes place, each state's delegation having to decide, we're going to vote for one candidate, which won. Those states agreed to vote for Adams. Adams picked up a few more, and he got a majority on the first vote. The reason that seemed so awful is that Adams did not get a single vote in the state of Kentucky, Clay's state. Jackson, who had gotten more electoral votes and more popular votes, came in almost a distant second.
Hmm. And I gather that there was none of this, as there was with Mr. Gore in 2000, there was none of this, and now, as I once said, it is time for me to go. Andrew Jackson had rather a different reaction, didn't he?
And so did the state of Tennessee. Jackson immediately resigned his Senate seat, and the state of Tennessee nominated him for president a few months after Adams was inaugurated. You see, in the administration of James Monroe, those 8 years, we'd seen the first great debate over slavery, the first great debate over tariff reform. Every one of the basic sectional issues which led to the Civil War were out in the open for the first time just before Adams became president, and the southern states immediately sought a refuge in their own party, and of course they had the great hero in Jackson to lead it.
What was that inauguration like then?
Well, to begin with, people weren't sure that anybody would show up because muddy little Washington, this out-of-the-way place that was the federal capital, had a circus in town.
Adams, I think that's still true.
All the people who were seriously interested in government, maybe that you could put them in a broom closet, I don't know. They worried that that nobody would appear for the ceremony. See, the inaugural was really a quiet event, except for the fact that he had delivered what would be, until then and was thereafter, one of the longest inaugural addresses in the history of the presidency. I'll read it to you, if I may.
Please.
He says, "I shall look for whatever success may attend my public service, and knowing that, quote, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain, with fervent supplications to his favor, to his overruling providence, I commit with humble but fearless confidence my own fate and the future destinies of my country.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. When you said that, I was put in the mind your recitation, very nice recitation, of that part of John Quincy Adams' inaugural address reminds me of when John F. Kennedy invoked that same scriptural quotation when he was delivering the speech in the Massachusetts House of Representatives before he left to be inaugurated as president, except that the Lord would keep the city, the watchman wicked.
Did he indeed?
He did indeed.
Hey, good for you. I didn't. Yeah.
We've occasioned this conversation because of some, I think we can fairly call them superficial resemblances between the circumstance electing George W. Bush and John Quincy Adams. Let's sweep aside all the similarities for a moment. Can we be maybe even more instructed by some of the differences between them?
Well, I think we can, actually. It seems to me there's a very dramatic contrast between President John Quincy Adams and President-elect George W. Bush. That contrast may tell us a great deal about the nature of politics in America and, more especially, the nature of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got in John Quincy Adams, it seems to me, a man who on paper would seem to be ideally suited to be president of the United States. Learned, plus his, of course, his distinguished career in diplomacy as a mature man, Secretary of State, and of course he came from a family steeped in political tradition. He had all of that. But Adams was a political bumbler of the first order, simply because he didn't want to play by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now, George W. Bush acknowledges that his is a mangled syntax, and that's one thing, of course, that Professor Adams, as a master of rhetoric, never had. Here we have a incoming president who has great difficulty expressing himself. His background is one of, shall we say, a very limited experience in public life. He's governor of a state, which is splendid, of course. But he has what would seem to be a talent for American politics. And he can make the presidency work, which Adams could not. It'll be very interesting to watch.
Professor Nagel, thank you very much for all of your time.
Well, it's been fun talking with you.
Historian Paul Nagel, he is the author of John Quincy Adams, A Public Life, A Private Life, the book that George W. Bush is reading right before he's inaugurated as President of the United States. Professor Nagel joined us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul.